Welcome to this IFRS Foundation podcast. My name is Matt Tilling and I'm the Director of Education here at the IASB. It's my great pleasure to welcome back again the Chair, Hans Hoogeverst, and the Vice Chair, Sue Lloyd. Hans, before we discuss the Board's February meeting, I thought it might be useful if you could provide an update of the meeting of the IFRS Foundation trustees that happened in Paris earlier this month.
Yeah, so the trustees are our direct oversight body. They consist of about 20 people from all over the world, often with a background in private business or in public office. They provide us with direct oversight on our strategy. They give us our governance. They are not involved with the standard setting. We, as the ISB, are an independent standard setting body, but they take a very close look at the due process that we follow, whether that is being done correctly. We meet three times a year all over the world, and we always use those meetings. They're always in different places, and we always use those meetings to also have an event with local stakeholders to see what's going on in several parts of the world and to be able to emit our message. We had a very good evening with guest speaker Jean-Claude Trichet, former president of the European Central Bank, and we had a very good panel discussion on the implementation of IFRS 9. Also, we had an important meeting with the monitoring board. The monitoring board is the ultimate oversight body of our whole structure. It consists of securities regulators from around the world. They provide oversight over the trustees. So we have a three-tier structure, IASB, then on top the trustees, and on oversight on the trustees delivered by the monitoring board, by public authorities. And so we discussed our work program, but we also discussed a very important item, which is the effect analysis that we these days provide with our standards. And I discussed at length the effect analysis that we intend to provide for the new insurance standard.
Thank you very much. Sue, turning to the board meeting this week, one of the areas that was discussed is feedback received to an exposure draft that's looking at proposed amendments to the definition of a business. Not a particularly straightforward area.
No, it's not. And actually, this exposure draft was something that's a follow-up from the post-implementation review of our business combination standard, IFRS 3, that we undertook a few years ago. And when we did that post-implementation review, one of the messages that we received from people applying the standard is that it can be difficult to determine when something is a business. And it matters because if you acquire a business, you have to do business combination accounting and do things like calculate goodwill. And people told us that in some circumstances it can be difficult to distinguish between buying a set of assets versus buying a business. And this exposure draft was one that was designed to try to clarify that assessment and simplify it for people. It was a document, actually, that proposed very similar amendments to something that the FASB had put out at the time as well. Now, what we did at this meeting was to look at the initial comment letter analysis. We got 80 comment letters, and the staff brought us a summary of the main themes from those comments, some of the areas of agreement, some areas where people thought we needed to do more work. And so they'll follow up subsequently with some more detailed analysis of particular issues.
You mentioned that this is something that the FASB is also have also looked at. Is it likely that we're going to end up with a converged view around this definition?
We certainly hope so, particularly because IFRS 3 was one of our joint projects with the FASB, so it was a converged standard. The FASB have actually completed their re-deliberations of their changes to the definition of a business, and people have given us feedback on how important they think convergence is. Of course, many people would like us to maintain the convergence, but also a number of people always make the case that it's most important to get the best answers, and convergence isn't at all costs, if you like. But it will be certainly something that the board's going to be kept very aware of, where we might be similar or different when we're going through these re-deliberations.
Hans, turning to another matter, the board is also doing work to better represent the financial effects of rate regulation. Can you tell us a little bit about the discussions around this?
Yes, we are trying to develop a new standard specifically for rate-regulated activities. US GAAP already has a standard for rate-regulated activities. We do not. What are we talking about? Mainly about companies like utilities that are strictly regulated. Their rates are regulated. Their customers are basically forced to buy services from the rate-regulated industry because they have a monopolistic position, like a water provider or a electricity provider. Their rates are regulated. Often an electricity company, for example, is asked to provide a certain service, for example, to build a new power plant. And it gets sort of a promise from the rate regulator that they can recoup that investment in the following years by raising the rates in the future. We think that regular revenue recognition does not completely adequately reflect the economic activity of rate-regulated activities, industries, and that's why we are looking at a model that would reflect it accurately. It's a difficult thing to do, but we are making progress. We have already produced one discussion paper. Either we will develop a new discussion paper in which we sketch the model as we think it should be. If we think we really are pretty certain we have the model that we want, we might go straight for an exposure draft for a new standard.
Thank you. Sue, there was a short discussion about the forthcoming proposed narrow scope amendment to IFRS 9.
Yes, there was, and people who listened last month may remember that the board decided at the January meeting to propose a narrow scope amendment to IFRS 9 that would mean that for some assets that would not be eligible for amortised cost or fair value through OCI accounting under IFRS 9 as a result of particular prepayment features, that we would propose an amendment that would enable them to have that type of accounting. The timing of this is obviously critical, given that the effective date of IFRS 9 is the 1st of January 2018. And we actually discussed this, the comment period that we need for the exposure draft, with the Due Process Oversight Committee of the Trustees in January. And following their approval, the board agreed to a 30-day comment period for that proposed amendment.
Another matter related to IFRS 9, the board considered an IFRS Interpretations Committee tentative decision to develop a draft interpretation that would have addressed modifications and exchanges of financial liabilities measured amortized cost that do not result in derecognition of the financial liability.
That's right, and maybe it's useful to talk for a second about what the accounting issue here is, and it's if I actually have a change to the contractual terms, so the contractual cash flows on a liability were to change, but it's not significant enough to cause derecognition, do you have to recognise gains and losses and profit or loss as a result of those changes in cash flows? And the Interpretations Committee had agreed that that was the correct accounting, that there should be gains or losses recognised in profit or loss. And the first important point is that all 12 board members agreed with that conclusion. Most of the debate was then about the best way of communicating that clarity to the market, and the board unanimously disagreed with the recommendation of the committee to publish an interpretation because there was a concern that it was a proposal really to use an interpretation to draw attention to the issue and to highlight the importance of it rather than because we needed to clarify the accounting requirements. And so we had a discussion about what the best way was to give enough attention and focus to the issue to enable the change management that the IFRIC told us was needed in the market. And the board concluded that we didn't need to undertake standard setting activity to achieve that, but we should look at other ways to highlight what the relevant accounting was. And so the sort of thing that we're probably going to look at would be something like a webcast to highlight these decisions.
Hans, is this the last time we're going to see insurance at the board?
Well, let's hope so. We certainly do hope so. what we did in this meeting was discussing some sweep issues that had come to the fore as a result of finalizing the draft of the standard. Then there are, we ask a lot of national standard setters, for example, to look at the precise wordings if they are clear enough, and sometimes things pop up that we still have to deal with. One issue that we dealt with was the fact that in many countries there is regulation that, for example, insurers cannot ask for different premiums between men and women, even though their risks, for example, for pensions are very different, or behavior in traffic is another good example.
Women
are safer drivers than men generally, so the risk is very different. Normally, the premium, commercial premiums would be different, and that would result in grouping these contracts in different groups. What we have said, well, if there is a legal requirement to treat these customers the same and to ask for one premium, basically then you are looking at these two groups as one group, and you can also give them the accounting treatment of one group, to explain it in simple words. So that was a final change that we made along with some other more technical issues. We are now done. The staff will finalize the drafting in the next couple of weeks, and we hope to publish the standard in May.
So the final matter from the board I'd like to ask you about, a small issue. There was some further discussion about the post-implementation review of IFRS 13.
That's right. It was a short discussion, and really what the board was being asked about was how long the comment period should be for the request for information that we're going to publish as a next step in this post-implementation review. And the board agreed with the staff's recommendation that we have a 120-day period for consultation. So we expect the request for views to be published probably toward the end of the second quarter this year. And as we have discussed before, the post-implementation reviews are really a good opportunity for us to get feedback from people who are applying relatively new standards about whether or not they're operational, whether they're providing the sort of information we expected, and basically a sort of health and quality check, if you like, a few years after they've been in practice.
Thanks, Sue. Hans, there's been announcements that several board members have been appointed for their second term.
Yes, so we're very happy that Martin Edelman, our German board member, Gary Kabarek from the United States, Changu Su from Korea, and Mary Toker, also from the United States, that they have been appointed for a second term, so they will be with us for the next couple of years. And we also announced that Daryl Scott's second term will be lengthened by 2 years, so that he will complete a period of 10 years. Daryl is our South African board member. So we're happy that they will continue to serve. They are all excellent people from very different professional backgrounds, and also from very different geographic regions. They contribute to having a very good mix of board members, and they are very experienced and will be very valuable in their second term.
Sue, just to round out today's discussion, anything on the agenda for you over the coming weeks that you'd like to tell us about?
Yeah, a couple of things. Next week I'm off to Taiwan to have a meeting with our IFAS and National Standard Setters. And actually the week after that we've got our Accounting Standards Advisory Forum meeting here in London. So a lot of time spent with fellow standard setters in the next couple of weeks for me.
And Hans?
Yes, well, I will be flying off to South Africa on Sunday for a meeting of the Financial Stability Board, of which I am a member as chairman of the IASB. The Financial Stability Board is a group of about 40-50 regulators and public officials from around the world who are all have a responsibility for financial regulation. And what we try to do is to get as much harmonization in the world as possible around capital norms and accounting, of course. We meet a couple of times a year. Very important for us to be a member of that group. We We are a part of the regulatory community. We do our work not in isolation. We need to know what are the consequences of our work for others and what is the consequence of other types of regulation for our work. So that's an important meeting, and looking forward to going there. And then the week after that, I will travel off to Saudi Arabia. We are very proud to say that Saudi Arabia has become a full adopter of IFRS as of 2018. They will have a big conference that will celebrate that fact, and also the fact that the local standard setter, SOCPA, has reached the age of 25 years. So I'm looking forward to going there. I've never been to Saudi Arabia before, and it's always exciting to go to a new country that may be very different, but that is still using the same accounting standards as most of the world.
Thank you, Hans. Thank you, Sue. And thank you to our listeners to this podcast. Any feedback on these podcasts, please email communications@ifrs.org. The full summary of the board's discussion and decisions at the February meeting can be found in the ISB update. But for now, we'll close out and hopefully talk to you again next month.